All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Carson Price for Tuesday, March 26, 2024, coming to you from the GoGoat Sports Studio, built by Arbor Lee, here at the iconic Wall Center, downtown Vancouver. You're heading to a game, an event downtown. Call the Wall, 604-331-1000. Make it a staycation. Ask for the Carson Price rate. Some blackout date supply. Matt Carson alongside Irfan Ghaffar, who's sitting in for Blake Price this week. Grace Sass hitting switches, conducting things. Got a big show planned for you. It's all brought to you by Applewood Auto Group. We're right now at Applewood Infinity in Richmond, the 2023 QX50. You can lease or finance from 0% plus non-stack cash up to $10,000. The 2023 QX50 and QX55, that's what I'm driving. Absolutely love it. Gorgeous vehicle. You can lease from 1.99% up to 33 months. Plus $1,500 bonus cash. As they say, it's all good at Applewood. Tim Horton's poll question today. We're asking you, would you do the Elias Lindholm trade again? Yes or no? You can vote at Carson Price on Twitter or YouTube. Roll Up to Win is here for Tim's 60th anniversary. You play on the Tim's app to win prizes. Daily cash jackpot, $10,000. Can win the all-electric Volkswagen ID4. And a sun-soaked Hilton getaway. Download the Tim's app. Roll Up is on until March 31st. Great to see you. Thanks for sitting in this week. Absolutely. I appreciate you sitting in for me yesterday as I was making my way back from Vegas. First things first, I'm going to get you on a poll question, buddy. Where do you stand? The Elias Lindholm trade. Would you do it again?
Absolutely. I think that from the get-go, maybe the timing of it is, I think, a little bit different as to what people might suggest of our poll question here. But you're making that trade for, you know, for depth. Obviously, you're making that trade for a playoff run. That was your all-in move for the Vancouver Canucks.
As it turns out, Irf.
Yeah, and they made it at the end of January. They didn't make it at the March 8 deadline. So I 100% would do that trade again. I think that we're going to see the benefits of Elias Lindholm in the playoffs when they need him.
Scratch last night.
Yeah.
Nagging injury. Got him a rest day. It's 9 points in 22 games as a Vancouver Canuck. But of course, you got him thinking he was going to play with your best players in the top six. You tried him on the wing. Coach Tuck it on record saying he is a center. I got to play him in the middle. And so that meant bumping him down to third line center where he's not playing with the the level of winger that can help the points and be productive from that standpoint. Now, he's a good defensive player. I think we've all seen that. He's a good penalty killer.
Yeah.
And, of course, you got him for the Stanley Cup playoffs, so there's still a lot of runway left here because the Canucks, though they failed to clinch a playoff spot on Monday, are going back to the playoffs. That much we know. And, you know, they could be a pretty tough matchup down the middle if you're playing Miller, Pettersson, and Lindholm. Now, I voted no at the moment, but I leave open the possibility that this could still turn in the Vancouver Canucks' favor. We'll see where it goes. The other thing, and you were just mentioning to me before we started, Irv, you were starting to see some frontline NHL players now getting scratched.
Load management.
Load management has arrived at the National Hockey League, everybody. Was it Tyler Seguin?
Tyler Seguin not playing for the Dallas Stars tonight in San Jose, so you can probably bet he's in against the Canucks on Thursday. He's also coming back from an injury, but it's something that you're going to see more and more now, I think. And it's especially interesting here because once the Canucks eventually do clinch, if they do perhaps clinch on Thursday or what have you, a playoff spot, I just wonder what this team looks like in that final week before game one. That Thursday game against the Winnipeg Jets, if they do in fact end up playing on Saturday night here at Rogers Arena to open, I wonder who plays
that game. We'll get to that in a moment here. Just to finish the point on Lindholm, I would rather they sit him down and get him well for the Stanley Cup playoffs right now than let him play through something that's going to be aggravating, that's going to be nagging, that could get worse between now and the Stanley Cup playoffs with 10 games to go. You mentioned it. You broke the story here because, and look, I'm sure we probably fixate on it a little bit more than Joe and Joanne Public, but for months, the NHL's website, Critical Dates, listed Monday, April 22nd as the beginning of the Stanley Cup playoffs. There was no press release issued on this, unless I'm mistaken. The critical dates have now changed. April 20th, now the first day of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, absolutely. And I think that moving it back, obviously, there's a bunch of stuff that went into consideration, building availabilities and all sorts of things. Obviously, the broadcast partners wanting to have weekend dates to start, you know, what some might call the best playoffs in sports. Why not start it on the weekend? And if you're a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, you're probably looking at your team playing that Saturday night here at Rogers Arena. The tough part is they finish their season on the Thursday night in Winnipeg.
I was going to say, this would be a particularly tough draw for the Vancouver Canucks, and we already have the debate about is there enough of an advantage to finishing in first place or finishing with quote-unquote home ice in this league. Because the Canucks play the Winnipeg Jets in the Manitoba Capital on Thursday, April 18th. If you're asking them to turn around with travel from two time zones away and host on Saturday, April 20th, that's a particularly big ask for a team that could well be first place in the Western Conference. That could well be the President's Trophy winner in terms of whatever advantage they should get by finishing in those lofty positions. We'll see where it goes. It you know, obviously we like our Saturday night hockey here in Canada. We have been conditioned that way. So I can understand why Sportsnet may want games on Saturday, April 20th. You also have the Edmonton Oilers who are going to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. You have the Winnipeg Jets who are going to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. And of course you have the Toronto Maple Leafs as well. So we'll see how it shakes out. There are some teams that play on that final Thursday of the regular season that are going to the playoffs. There are some that do not. I would like to think that they will make, they will schedule so that teams who aren't in action just 48 hours in advance play on that Saturday. Teams that have had a little more runway, and the Canucks and others who play on the 18th start a little later. We shall see. All right, let's get to our top story, failure to clinch. The Vancouver Canucks had an opportunity to be the first Western Conference team to clinch a playoff berth on Monday night, but they lose at Rogers Arena to the LA Kings. They lose 3-2. And now 4-2-1 on this epic nine-game homestand. They have 4 goals in regulation in 3 meetings with the LA Kings this season, Irv. They've got 1 win and 2 defeats. Are we starting to get concerned about this particular matchup for the Canucks? Because it could happen,
yep.
Right? If Vegas were to surpass LA in the standings, then it's very conceivable that the Canucks could draw the Kings in the first round. Are we starting to get concerned that that passive 1-3-1 trap and what the Kings do defensively is a bit of an antidote for this Canucks team?
Yeah, especially when your stars weren't really your stars against the LA Kings and really haven't been that much this season, to be completely honest. I know Brock Besser scored, Quinn Hughes got an assist last night, but Elias Pettersson, relatively quiet. JT Miller, relatively quiet. Their big dogs weren't their big dogs. They got a Sam Lafferty, beautiful goal by Sam Lafferty, but in the playoffs, you're going to need your top guys to perform. And a lot of criticism comes with this team when they take losses if the top guys aren't there. But when you go into the playoffs, you're going to need your top guys. And I think that that's the biggest thing when you look at this team. You know, the Elias Petterssons, the Quinn Hughes, the JT Millers, Brock Bessers, and, you know, we can even throw Thatcher Demko in it. I know he's hurt, but if they're not there night in and night out, it's going to be hard for your hockey team to win games. And last night was pretty evident of that.
No doubt. Let's hear from JT Miller about... Well, and he acknowledges that getting on the inside, getting the scoring areas against this team has been a problem for the Canucks. Take a listen.
I mean, you're not going to have a lead all the time going into the third period, and you're certainly going to have to come from behind. So constant learning lessons, you want to win every game, obviously. We had some good pushes, but I think we have a hard time, I think, getting on the inside sometimes against those guys, you know, and we need to do a better job. The forwards got to do a better job of getting there.
Yeah, well, Irv, there's part of me that can't believe we're back here. Because I just, we're both old enough to remember when a lot of teams in the NHL played this way.
Yep.
To the detriment of the entertainment value, right? And in some cases, and the Minnesota Wild were always Exhibit A because of Jacques Lemaire and the fact that he was a great defensive forward on some great defensive Canadiens Stanley Cup teams and then picked up and took... elements of what himself and Bob Gainey and some of those other great early checking forwards mm-hmm. brought to the preseason and expanded it at a team level. And we've seen this in Vancouver with Torts and guys collapsing in front of the net and all that. But I just, you know, the skill level now in the league is so good. Virtually everybody can handle the puck pretty well. Virtually everybody can skate. Like, the product has gotten just so much more aesthetically pleasing, I think you can argue, over the last 5 years or so. And the Kings are just an outlier. And so, you know, you look at your timeline during a Canucks-Kings game and you see people going like,
what am I watching?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can't abide like anyone but this team in the Stanley Cup playoffs. A, because they've had some success against the Canucks, but B, because the games are just so awful against the LA Kings. So Canucks still lead the Western Conference by a point. That's both over the Colorado Avalanche and the Dallas Stars. Colorado's won 9 in a row here and has a game in hand. So we'll see if they can get to top spot in the Western Conference, because, of course, if not, that probably means the Nashville Predators, yeah, who are on yet another heater here, Irv. Incredible. Quinn Hughes, you mentioned he gets on the score sheet, and we have monitored this for some time. He has passed Jyrki Lumi and Dennis Kearns for all-time scoring by a Canucks defenseman. Next up is Matthias Olund in second place, and Quinn Hughes is just 3 points back of Matthias Olund. So I think it's fair to say, even with a potential load management scratch, who knows, we'll see, that Quinn Hughes is going to be your number 2 all-time scoring defenseman for the Vancouver Canucks at the conclusion of this season. And then the only guy left to pass will be Alexander Edler, who's at 409 points. And who knows, if Hughes puts down another season like the one he's having, he could very well, around this time next year, be right on the heels of Alexander Edler. We're going to play a clip from Hughes here. because I thought we both listened to it and thought this is great insight on how Quinn plays the game, but it is also great insight into how Quinn Hughes thinks the game and the different things that he has got to be aware of when he's on the ice. Let's take a listen.
You know, something I got to be wary of just making sure that I'm getting to my point and making a grade A chance instead of just exerting energy. And had some couple, you know, of that backhand in the second and a shot in the second I liked, both from the right side of the rink, and I'll take those chances any day. But as far as that, I think I'd, you know, probably want to have a couple more shots than that and, throughout the game. But I thought some guys played really well, and obviously not much Casey can do on those two goals there.
So I love that clip for a couple of reasons. One, what we just outlined. Two, there's a part of it that's concerning, right?
Yeah.
When you look at him and you see 26 minutes and 35 seconds and you hear about him expending energy, you know, it gets a little nerve-wracking, I'm sure, for Canucks fans. It has been an extraordinary season for Hughes, but boy, does he play a lot. And you hope and pray that he's got a ton left for the Stanley Cup playoffs. But the second part I love about it is he's a wearer. Like,
yeah.
He's aware of what a wasted energy skate would be,
yeah,
and what a dangerous scoring chance creation skate would be, including right down to which side of the ice,
yeah,
he's best to do that on. The hockey IQ shone through in that clip.
At 24 years old, too, right? I mean, he's young, and we just mentioned, obviously, he's going to lead the team in franchise records again, 24 years old. But I think the biggest thing for Quinn Hughes is, yes, like you mentioned, Matt, he is so much smarter than almost every one of his teammates, to be completely honest, when the way that he thinks the game and sees the game. He picks up the puck at the blue line. He's probably beating almost everyone one-on-one up against the wall there. And then he skates down. You're beating the defenseman that's coming to get you. And at that point in his mind, he's thinking, why is there no one in front of the net? Why isn't there someone that I can get that I can throw the puck in front of, goes off a leg, one of my teammates is there. And then I think when you look at it, and we also heard from JT Miller, that's he's saying the same thing. We need to get in front of those areas to make those plays. And the Kings are a team that defensively, they just put everyone in front of the net. So for Quinn Hughes, the exerting the energy, yeah, it's pointless for him because none of his teammates are thinking the same thing to get in front of the net. And I think that that's why it was so frustrating for both of those players,
yep,
knowing that they can be way better at
it. No, that's a great point. It dovetails perfectly, yeah, with what Miller was talking about, getting to the inside. But therein lies one of the troubles against this team is you have this dynamic talent like Quinn Hughes that can create, but there just might not be enough space on that compacted inner ice to be able to generate the same number of goals as you might expect from the scoring chances that he's able to skate his way into. Now, staying with the defense, we saw Hughes and Roenick split up. We have not seen that a whole lot this year.
Nope.
In fact, very rarely. Hughes with Myers and the opportunity for Philip Roenick to quote-unquote anchor his own pair, which I feel has kind of become a, that will live in Canucks lore, I have a feeling, Roenick at anchoring his own,
yeah,
pair. Philip Roenick playing with Nikita Zadorov. What do you think of it?
I mean, for anchoring his own pair, he led the team in shots, so he was doing something there, trying to get the offense from his defense. Minus one, 21:57 of ice time. Didn't look out of place, but you just really didn't notice him too much. And I think that that's maybe a good thing and a bad thing. You know, if from your defenseman, you're not being noticed, you're not on the wrong side of things all the time. But if you are being noticed, it's because you're doing good things. He took five shots. I really don't remember any of them, to be honest. And I was,
yeah,
at the game watching. Yeah. A couple of them were just floating in, pucks on net. And I guess, it, you know, maybe it's good things happen. But if the goalie stops, freezes the puck, then it's a moot point, to be completely honest. Look, this conversation is going to continue surrounding this player until they come to an extension with him. If they in fact do that, you're not paying him Quinn Hughes type of money that Quinn Hughes is making now. You're just not.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I don't think you can get up to that $7.8 wow million dollar range.
The case is going to be there,
100%,
right?
Like the case is there because Quinn Hughes is making him all types of money.
Okay.
So now I'm almost at a point where Canucks management in the back of their mind saying, I know what we're doing here, and I know things in the back of their agenda. They're saying, okay, well, let's put him with someone else and see if he can handle the big bucks.
Do you think this is in response to all the talk about how much he's worth, the contract that Alan Walsh's agent and Roenick turned down, which is what, in the $6.5 million,
yeah,
dollar range? Do you think this is the Canucks saying, okay, you think you're worth that kind of money? Coach Talkett, put him on his own pair and let's see how he does. Do you draw a straight line there, Irv?
No, I don't really think it is, but I think it's also Rick Talkett kind of being like, okay, well, we're at a point now where I need to figure out if this guy can handle a defensive pairing by himself. We're going to get into the parts of the playoffs here that I need to know I can trust this guy on his own. And if you can't, then that's where the issue falls if you're the Canucks paying a guy that much money.
Right. Earlier in the season, were you in a, I want to see this guy anchor his own pair? Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I was too.
Anyone can put up points with Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes got Luke Shen paid.
Yeah. Well, and the thinking has evolved, of course, and this is another storyline that we've had course through the Canucks season that, you know, don't saddle Quinn Hughes. As great as he is and as good as he's going to make his defense partner look, don't saddle him with a guy who is the pure defender. We used to always think, hey, put the offensive guy, particularly if he was little, beside the big granite block defenseman, you got the best of both worlds. The thinking has evolved in terms of, no, put a guy who actually has some hands, actually has some skating ability, some offensive aptitude alongside your number one offensively inclined defenseman. And then you're going to really be able to watch him flourish, and not to mention the second guy in the pair is going to be able to flourish. And really, Hughes and Roenick have been that. I know the points have gone down for Roenick since the All-Star break. Irv, but of course they have for everybody on the Vancouver Canucks. Another storyline we're covering here and observing is the Canucks have gone from that high-flying scoring team in the first half of the season to a more defensive-oriented group. We'll get to a stat on that here in a moment. But that is and was the thinking. So then, okay, if Roenick has to anchor his own pair, do you like Myers in that spot?
Yeah.
As they lined it up? I mean, because the other options, or at least the other options with the six defensemen he dressed yesterday, are Cole, Soucy, or Zadorov, a lefty playing on the right side.
You're probably not doing that. I don't think that Quinn Hughes minded playing with Noel Juulsen, to be completely honest. Now, I don't think that that's going to happen when we get to game one in the playoffs. But just going back to Philip Roenick for a second, I mean, Cam Robinson had a great tweet yesterday. We mentioned it on the show. A tale of two seasons. First 42 games played, 36 points. He was plus 32. The last 30, he's had 9 points. I mean, yes, it's gone down, and the Canucks, like you mentioned, Matt, have gone to that more defensive-minded group. But if you're not producing at an offensive level, you better be stopping the puck from getting out of your net, or you better be that shutdown guy that you can be dependent on if you want to be paid those big type of bucks.
Here's something else that came out of last night, Monday's game against the Kings, and it's JT Miller. And I thought this was a pretty astute observation about the way the LA Kings reacted after they won this hockey game. Let's take a listen.
You know, I love the fact when, you know, they're banging their, you know, I don't love losing games, but, you know, when other teams are banging their sticks and when that last puck's cleared out, you know, they know they just beat a good hockey team. I mean, it says a lot. And, you know, it's going to be a lot of hard games here coming down. This is good prep for us, and we got to find a way to win games like that and, you know, not give up the late one in the second or whatever happened. And, you know, I mean, they're all tight against LA. I mean, that's just how it is going to be this time of year.
Irv, Dallas, Vegas twice. L.A. again over the next 2 weeks.
Winnipeg as well near the end of the season.
Winnipeg and Edmonton near the end of the season. Are the Canucks a measuring stick now?
Yep, they have to be. I mean, their target's been on their back ever since the start that they had. And, you know, we all looked at this team in the beginning and said, hey, that's going to fade. They're going to come back to reality at some point here. Well, the reality is set in that they're a good hockey team, that they're a team that you're going to get your best game from your opponent every single night, whether they're up in the standings or whether they're near the bottom feeders in the NHL. They look at you and they say, okay, you know what? It might be a measuring stick game. It might be one of those games that says, if this is going to be our first round opponent, this is going to be how we have to play. The Dallas Stars can come in and say, could this be a team that we're going to be in the Western Conference final? Is this going to be one of those teams, right? So when you look at it, I mean, the Canucks should be able to pat their backs a little bit because they've been that good this season, and they've been relentless in how good they've been. From another team's point of view, you're coming in and saying, okay, are these the big dogs? You know, they're in the race for President's Trophy along with seven other teams, but these are one of the big dogs of the league, and let's see how we stack up here.
Well, and as mentioned, it's sort of been a tale of two seasons for the big dogs. The first half of the season where the Canucks were winning games with goals galore. Since the All-Star break, not as many goals. And then, of course, came the Thatcher Demko injury, and March 9th, so we're, what, 2.5 weeks since the injury, Casey DeSmith has had to come in, and Casey DeSmith has played the last six hockey games in succession. And look, Casey DeSmith had done quite well as a backup goaltender. He has not really been a starter in his career, so we had questions about how he would handle the workload. But, and we see this all the time in the NHL, when you lose a star player, particularly when that star player is a netminder, the rest of the group sort of has its attention captured and understands the need to play better defensive hockey. How does this strike you? The last 14 games, so, and again, DeSmith has played seven of those, six starts plus the one relief. So half of them DeSmith basically and half of them Demko, even maybe a little more on the DeSmith side. The last 14 games, Canucks have given up 14 goals and 227 shots. Like, that's exceptional.
Structure, right? And it's taken a while for them to get here, but this is the structure that they want to play. Keep teams wide. Don't let them get the puck on net. Block shots. There was a play on Saturday night. I remember it against the Calgary Flames. Elias Pettersson laying out flat, blocking a shot. Right. And I think when you look at it and you have that buy-in from every single player on that roster, bottom from your superstars all the way to your last defenseman that doesn't play that much, or your forward group that's only getting 7 or 8 minutes of ice time, when they're going out and they're laying out for blocking shots and doing those things, it's everyone is bought into the system and the structure that Rick Tocchet and his coaching staff have implemented. I mean, you look at Thatcher Demko, he's 34-13. He's got a .917 save percentage. Like, Vezina finalist, almost. He probably should be.
Well, that was one of the things I wanted to ask you. Does he have any chance to win it, or is finalist the best case scenario?
I think finalist probably best case scenario. I mean, he maybe has a chance to win it, but I think it's finalist for sure. I mean, Connor Hellebuck's having a ridiculous season. Bobrovsky's, you know, knocking on the door as well, and there's some other pretty good goalies in the National Hockey League right now.
Yeah. Of course, UC Saros in Nashville. I mean, Saros's numbers aren't necessarily stackable with that group, but given what they're doing in the second half, the other thing that you and I were talking about before we fired up the live stream here, I have to think Tocchet is still the leader for the Jack Adams.
Yeah,
and I do think he has some cushion there as well, but. You mentioned Spencer Carberry and what the Washington Capitals are doing here with the GM who wrote off the team and said we're playing our their future is our main concern, and here's Washington with a chance to make the playoffs. In fact, sitting on a playoff spot tonight in a Tuesday, going into Tuesday's action, where we've got some huge playoff implication games. Now, Florida's the defending Eastern Conference champion, but they were the eighth seed last year. So you got to like what Paul Maurice has done down in South Florida. I think he's got to be a candidate. Look, Torts was a candidate, maybe still is a candidate, but Philadelphia is fading here a little bit. I'm not sure the Sean Couturier business will help him. Great job in Winnipeg, but Rick Bonus has missed a bunch of games on health matters, so you wonder whether that affects his candidacy. And then you got Andrew Brunette and what he's doing in Nashville in the second.
That's the one that I was going to ask you. I was going to, are you going to give him any love? If, in fact, they do pull it off, do you give him any love? Like, do you have to think of it?
Well, put it this way. Tocchet is still my leader there.
Yep.
If I'm filling out a ballot, Rick Tocchet still gets the vote. And look, if they win the if they're number one in the West and they win the President's Trophy, then I think it has to be done. Yeah, forget about it. Yeah, I think it's done. But if the Canucks slip from here, I think Brunette's going to get a lot of love because of the second half, because when you look at how just deeply out of it Nashville was at one point, you know, not to mention, you know, they have the little, sometimes a good story helps. We canceled the team trip to U2 at the Sphere. They didn't earn it.
And then they played well despite their coach.
Yeah, exactly. And then we didn't lose for like a month and a half thereafter. So I think Brunette will be there. And look, if Philly makes the playoffs, I could see Torts getting being a finalist as well. If Philly doesn't, I think Paul Maurice or somebody else, Carberry, has an opportunity to jump into the top three.
There's a lot of good stories. I mean, he's not going to get it or maybe vote it, but if the Kings make the playoffs, Jim Hiller, and that the way that he's been, that he took over this season, right, and was able to go and get his team to play, obviously not a great style of hockey that fans enjoy watching, but it is proving that they have had success and they are able to do it at a high level.
Well, I wonder if they would hold two things against Jim Hiller. Number one, style of play. Number two, just not as many games coached as the other guys. Not a full season. It brings me actually to the at Rinkwide Vancouver poll question being asked today. With 10 games to go, which Canucks milestone is most likely to be reached? Miller at 100 points. He's at 91 now. Hughes at 90 points. He's at 81. Besser with 40 goals. He's three away with 37. Or Philip Ronick, who's 5 points shy of 50 on the season. Talk to me. Of those milestones, which one do you think is most likely and which one are you rooting for?
Well, if history suggests anything for this season, Brock Besser scores in bunches, so he's probably going to get to 40 at some point this week.
And that's the one that I think I'd like to see the most.
Yeah.
Well, especially after the J-Pat question of last year, right? Like, is this year to get to 30? This the year I get to 30? You know, to be able to say, hey, came back a year later after everything that went on, including a trade request that went unfulfilled, a contract that nobody wanted, and got to the 40-goal plateau. Of course, we all have a little bit of every time I think of Brock Besser, there's a little, you know, coursing of empathy that shoots through you because we know the battle his late father Duke went through and how close the family was and how much that weighed on Brock. So that's the one I think I would like most like to see happen. But honestly, with the way he's going, Irf, 10 more games for Miller to get 9 more points.
Yeah. He can get 4 against Anaheim on Sunday.
No, that's it. Yeah. Because, like, there are some Arizona games here.
Yep.
We know what they've looked like in the second half of the season. There's, as you mentioned, the Anaheim game here. Now, still going to play L.A. Excuse me. Edmonton, and I know they're a different animal than what we saw, but the Canucks had no trouble scoring against them early. I think Miller to 100 is really likely at this stage.
JT sitting on 98 points, Matt. They've already clinched. They're not going to win the President's Trophy, but they're in the playoffs, and it's the final week of the season. How much do you load management if you're the head coach
That's a great call. Quinn, That's a great call. I haven't thought of it.
Yeah.
I suppose I would do what's best for the hockey club. I also would imagine that JT would present quite a case to be playing in those games, but just don't ask him why he's looking at the stat sheet.
No, absolutely not.
No, good dilemma there, but I think he's going to get to 100 points. And quite frankly, I think he deserves to get to 100 points. I mean, to fall the 1 point short a couple years ago, when he had such a marvelous season, and he's just been outstanding this year. And then, you know, Hughes, look, he's a point-per-game defenseman, and if he's better than a point-per-game defenseman, but, you know, if one more from here, if it's all it would take for him to finish with 82 points, I still believe if he is outpointing Cale Makar at the end of the year, and the Canucks finish ahead of the Colorado Avalanche, I think you're going to see Quinn Hughes win the Norris. Now, I would be a little less confident if Colorado finishes ahead of the Canucks, and of course they got a game in hand, one back, and I would be really concerned for Hughes if Makar is able to pass him in points.
Yeah.
But 78 to 81 right now. Again, Makar has a game in hand from here. But so long as those two things hold, I think we're looking at the first Norris Trophy winner in Vancouver Canucks history.
Let me ask you this, Matt. Can you sit here and say that Quinn Hughes is the Canucks' best player? Or maybe their most important player?
I would argue he's certainly their most important.
Okay. Yes. Is Cale Makar Colorado's most important player, or is it Nathan MacKinnon?
I would argue it's Nathan MacKinnon.
Okay. And then there, I think that's the way that I would look at it going into the voting.
And I hear you there.
Yeah.
The distinction I would draw there is there is such a gap between Quinn Hughes and the Canucks' next best defenseman.
It's true.
With all due respect to Philip Ronick, but boy, are there some good defensemen in Colorado. So, like, when I look at their defense group and Taves and others, I go, well, boy, like, whoever they throw over the boards there is pretty damn good. Whereas, you know, and as good a player as Rantanen is, the gap between MacKinnon and the rest of the Avalanche forwards. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, I view Quinn Hughes as their best player and their most important player.
I 100%
now,
agree with you.
If JT Miller gets team MVP this year, I think that's entirely deserved because I think he's been awesome as well. It's really a coin flip. And frankly, Demko was in this conversation too before he got hurt. But, you know, day in, day out, game in, game out, year in, season out, Quinn Hughes is my guy in terms of their best player and their most important player.
Yeah, most important player and most valuable player. Maybe two different things as well when you look
true.
At things, right? Because Demko, probably their most valuable when he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Demko or Quinn Hughes, night in and night out, is definitely their most important player. And then obviously the argument can be made for JT Miller and Elias Pettersson as well. I mean, I've said since the beginning when those two guys were very young and, you know, just starting their careers, like this team is going to go as far as, you know, 40 and 43 take them.
Since you brought him up, are you at all concerned about Elias against some of the better teams?
I think it's interesting when you look at it. I mean, he gets leaned on pretty heavily. The book from some guys and playing against him is, you know, he doesn't like the big, heavy physical game. I know he throws the reverse hits a lot, and he's very good at that, and that's how he establishes positioning. But guys don't like being hit, and it's one of those things, like, you know, when they changed the power play and Miller went back to the left, and that game that Pettersson had where he, you know, he dangled, put the puck through his legs and around his back, and he went on the bench and smiled after he did that. You saw that confidence. You saw that kind of sparkle back in his eye, but it wasn't against a good team, right? And when you look at it, these big, bruising, physical teams, it's something that, you know, Elias Pettersson kind of still has a knock on him. Can he get up for those games? Are those the games that he really enjoys playing in? And, you know, I know we make so much talk about, you know, well, he's played in the bubble, and he was excellent in the bubble. This is Elias Pettersson's, to be completely honest, this is going to be his first taste of real playoff action.
He has said that himself,
yeah,
Irv.
This is it. Real playoff action, away, you know, advantage. You know, you're going to get the home ice fans on you. There's going to be media covering you every single day. Your entire city is going to be focused on you every single day for however long your run is. So this is something that you're going to have to get used to. But I don't know if I'm concerned is the right word because he's got the skill and he's so good, but it is one of those things that maybe there are some red flags against the better teams.
Yeah, here's what I will say. We both agree on this, that if you're going to wait Thatcher Demko's bubble performance against Vegas, where he was so fantastic in terms of coming in and relieving an injured Jacob Markstrom and really giving them a chance in that series, an opportunity to go to the Western Conference Final, then you have to wait Elias's playoffs as well. If you want to throw them out, then throw them all out for all the Canucks players, those who succeeded, those who did not succeed in the Edmonton bubble of 4 years ago. Okay, prospect side of things here. Jonathan Lekromäki has arrived. There is video of him skating in Abbotsford. David Quadrelli on the beat. Something tells me, Grady, that Quadrelli has been waiting since the moment they called his name at the draft to get out to Abbotsford and get some video of Lekromäki, right?
Oh, yeah, and he's in scramble mode today trying to get back to make the show at 2 p.m. Tough traffic, middle of the day.
Are you free to fill in on Canucks conversation?
Yes, absolutely. Today and tomorrow. Okay. I can do it. No problem.
Quads, if you want, I'll just stay here. I'll get the show started and we'll pass the baton off to you like a relay race. So Lekromäki skating with Abbotsford. We'll see if he gets in a game there. Suspect you want to see that. Also know he's going back to Sweden to try out for the World Championship team. Of course, had a terrific season. And in a lot of cases, Irv, like, he's the profile that they need, right? The scoring winger who's got the big shot and can score some goals from distance and make some of these centermen even better. Now, it's not going to happen this year, that much we know. But perhaps starting as soon as next season, we can be looking at another potent offensive forward to add to this group. Also want to get to a couple of other Canucks prospects that our friend Dave Hall of Canucks Army has been tweeting about recently. Sawyer Mineo, the defenseman with the Seattle Thunderbirds, his season is wrapped up here. As Dave notes, he finished second on the Thunderbirds in both goals at 16 and points at 53. His goals ranked fifth in the WHL, actually, amongst defensemen. And Dave says there was tons of growth, all situation growth this year for Minio. So he's looking like a nice pick from that draft as well, which also, of course, included Hunter Bastevich, who's already been used to land Elias Lindholm. And then Kirill Kudryavtsev, the Russian defenseman playing in the Ontario Hockey League. His season's not done, but his regular season is. 47 points, 5 goals, 42 assists in 67 games. 10th in points for OHL defensemen. Dave says what stood out this year, vast improvement to his overall game. He finished plus 29, which was up 44 from last year. And he's going to get an opportunity to further showcase himself in the Ontario Hockey League playoffs, where his Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds will face the Guelph Storm. So, hockey season's wrapping up, kind of around the continent. NHL, AHL still going on. Of course, WHL going on. You got the Giants, you got the Royals, you got the Rockets, you got the Cougars up in Prince George, all in the WHL playoffs. So we'll be following those as well. And frankly, selfishly, hoping for some BC versus BC series
absolutely
in the dub as it goes along. Let's get to today's menu. It is brought to you by Ben Moss Jewelers. Ben Moss Jewelers, proudly Canadian-owned, operated with a history dating back more than 100 years. 5 locations in BC, including Willowbrook in Langley, Coquitlam Centre. Committed to customer satisfaction, you can check out the large selection of Canadian mined, lab-grown, and lab-grown diamonds. The mined diamonds are available on a payment plan that suits your need. For more info, you can check out benmoss.com. Ben Moss, for the love of jewelry. John Shannon's going to join us here in a moment, playing to get to with John, both on the season side of things, the NHL side of things, and, of course, the Vancouver Canucks. We'll do some hashtags, the best and worst of Twitter, where on the heels of a baseball gambling scandal, we have one in the NBA as well, and the epicenter is Toronto with a reserve big man who don't like the evidence against him at this point.
Wow.
No, not in the least. Also, Stefan Radzinski. He's a race car driver, lives here in Vancouver, and this is amazing. You don't see a lot of this. Stefan is sponsored by our friends at the Applewood Auto Group. It is very unusual to see a regional automotive group going full bore into a livery sponsorship of a race car driver, but that's exactly what's happened here. Stefan is racing in the Pirelli GT4 series. It gets going next month in California. He idolized Greg Moore growing up, so a fantastic conversation coming up later with Stefan. John Shannon, the former executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada, the co-host of the Bob McCallum podcast. He joins us now. Did you stay up late to watch the Kings and Canucks?
What do you think?
Of course you did.
Of course
I did. If you were going to skip, I guess this one was a little earlier, but if you were going to skip, boy, yell at the Kings. Not a particularly exciting brand of hockey these days.
No, but I think people in the organization would call it winning hockey when you think that what Jim Hiller has and his staff have brought to the table for the Kings. And let's also be pretty frank, that they're finally getting some goaltending again and playing better structured defensively. And then two of the guys that were, I'm trying to be diplomatic here, two of the guys that were problems when Todd was coach are starting to contribute, and that's P.L. Dubois and Kevin Fiala. And so all of a sudden, the Kings are a hard out, and the Kings will be a hard out the rest of the way and into the playoffs.
Is that the team you'd want to avoid if you're the Canucks, based on head-to-head?
This has been a great question for the last two or three days in everywhere in the Western Conference. And if I'm president or general manager of a team, I'm going to the meetings and saying, can the first place team get a bye? There are going to be good teams in the West out of the playoffs in less than 14 days. That's just a reality of how good the top eight teams are in the conference. And if you look at it right now, on here we are on the 26th of March. If I told you the two best teams right now are the Los Angeles Kings and the Nashville Predators, and both of them, you know, are not in the 1-2 positions in either divisions, I don't think you could disagree with me.
No, Nashville has been extraordinary. I mean, rip off another 5-game streak here. Well, let me ask you this then. Aiden Hill out for Vegas. Do you have any concerns about them in the second wild card spot, 5 points up on the Blues?
I have concerns about Vegas on their goaltending, period. That has been the weak link in the team since Christmas time. They have not been able to get consistent goaltending out of Hill or Logan Thompson. And they, you know, remember there always used to be the joke about Vegas goaltending. They could go five deep. Well, there's no five deep anymore in Vegas when it comes to goaltending. It's two, and it's a long drop to Gary Patera. And so if I'm Kelly McCrimmon, I'm going to Lourdes and hoping Aiden Hill is okay. And then hopefully that Logan Thompson can recapture some of the glory that he had last year before he got hurt. That's their biggest problem. We all know how good the defense can be. We all know that, push comes to shove in the first round of the playoffs that we're going to see Tomas Hertl. I'm not sure about Mark Stone yet, but they're going to be a tough out other than goaltending. That is their biggest problem.
Yeah, I think we're going to see Hertl before the end of the regular season, if they can do it cap-wise.
Yeah, John, when you look at another team and goaltending, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers, we all know the firepower they have up front. Their defense has gotten better, but another team that is kind of going to depend on how good goaltending is come playoff time.
And Irv, I'll tell you what, I am not concerned about Stuart Skinner. Yeah. I'm not. I think he's just fine. I think he's had a very good season. It's a long season. I think what they're trying to do and what they've tried to do in the last 3 or 4 weeks until the end of the regular season is make sure that he's rested before he got to the playoffs. Because last year in the playoffs, he was tired and it affected his play. And you, I know that it's, you know, people get concerned at Edmonton. Well, people get concerned in Edmonton about everything. But the concern is Stuart Skinner good? Stuart Skinner is good enough. And the question is, can he be rested before the playoffs start?
Do you have a problem with the NHL moving its playoff start time back to the 20th? Two days after the regular season?
No, because there is enough of a stagger during that last week of the regular season that they can place teams on the Saturday night. You know, it's funny. It was a very subtle move because I'm one of those guys that does check the critical dates calendar all the time. And there it was. It was the 22nd. It was the 22nd. And then somebody mentioned something to me and I went and checked and there it was the 20th. And so from that perspective, what you need to do for your partners, and in this case, that means people at Disney and people at Rogers and the people at TNT, is give them weekend dates. They prefer weekend dates to start the playoffs. The New York Rangers, for instance, finish much earlier in the regular season than, say, the Colorado Avalanche and the Edmonton Oilers, who finish on the Thursday. So I don't suspect we'll see an Oilers or Avalanche game on Saturday night, but I simply think it's possible to see a New York Ranger Stanley Cup playoff game on the Saturday night and perhaps even a Vancouver Canuck game on the Saturday night.
I was going to ask, because the Canucks are in Winnipeg that Thursday, the 18th. Would they ask Vancouver to play Saturday night?
I think I think what happens though at this and here the schedule maker at the league, Steve Hatzpetris, is brilliant with his matrix. I think they've probably told everybody the league dates open, and be prepared for absolutely anything at this point. We're still in the realm. And people are going to snicker at this. We're still in the realm trying to have teams and people that own arenas trying to generate revenue post-COVID. So if there's a concert coming and there's a lot more concerts coming, then you're going to try to book concert. But you still have to make sure your available dates are there for the Stanley Cup playoffs. So from that perspective, you know, there are going to be times where there's going to be a concert. If the Canucks are forced to play on the Saturday night, and this is just my supposition, if the Canucks are forced to play the Saturday night, then there will be another gap early in that playoff schedule to allow for a team to have a bit of rest.
And is it building availability number one driver and then broadcast wants or needs in that order, John?
That's a good question. My answer is I think that they have to fulfill the partner's wishes first. So I think it's television driving Saturday night. If, you know, like we saw last Saturday night, it ended up being an Panthers on ABC in the United States. I think that tells you that there's a need for live sports or live television for the U.S. networks on Saturdays as well. And so I think that there's probably going to be a push from the people in Bristol to say, we'd like to have some Saturdays, and could you give us the 20th? I don't think you want to go a weekend. Maddie, I don't think you want to go a weekend in April without hockey. It doesn't make much sense.
No, it doesn't. I'll say this, though. I mean, we may not know who's playing whom on the evening of the 18th with the potential for a Saturday 20th start to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, tough. You know, no, because you won't know you, at the end of the first round, you may not know, and you might have to start two days later too. I mean, this is not the time to be worried about schedule as much as it is, okay, are we prepared? Are we healthy? But you know what? You have so much money at stake now. It's between the two countries and the contracts. It's over $1 billion. So you better be in a position to give those partners content on a weekend. I think that's really the key thing. I was surprised to see it as the 22nd at one point, in fact, but perhaps there was some logic behind that. But now the 20th, to me, makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. John, first time in league history, 7 teams are in the President's Trophy race. League must have to be happy about that, where there's so much parity within the league now, no one's running away with it.
Well, Irf, I think what it tells you is that people in the know in New York will say, we don't need more than 16 teams in the playoffs because our month of March is the playoffs. This is our preliminary round. And there are a few of us have been saying that for a while. This is almost like a Super Tuesday today. When you look at the schedule and the matchup of all these games and the storylines of a ton of games going on tonight, it's fantastic. You know, 12 games, I try to watch as many as I can. I'm not sure I can watch everything I want to watch. You know, even the simpler stories. Jake Gensel's going home to Pittsburgh tonight. That's a cool story at a difficult time in Penguins history. And then you got Winnipeg and Edmonton, who are both coming off awful weekends, and they've got to right the ship and they've got to improve their playoff positions. So there are a ton of great stories on the schedule tonight. And that's, I think, the thing that you're alluding to. There are a ton of stories every night. Like, we had two games last night. Both games were important. I don't think when you draw a schedule up, a year ago, you're going to know that Vegas, St. Louis, and L.A., Vancouver are going to be important games on a Monday night, but they were.
Well, and scoreboard watching has been a lot of fun here recently. You know, as Irf notes, at the top, it's so tight. Every day, it seems like we've got a new leader in the clubhouse for the President's Trophy. And much as we might be lacking at the bottom of the West in terms of the playoff race, unless St. Louis can get its act together here and maybe make a run at Vegas, that final Eastern Conference wild card spot is pretty well contested.
Oh, by the way,
as well
tonight, Detroit's in Washington.
Right. Yeah. There you go. I mean,
so all of a sudden, another game that, you know, is must see TV. So it's a perfect time. And really, I mean, the Caps are such a great story. When you consider what Brian McClellan did that weekend before the trade deadline, when we had the whole Kuznetsov story. We had him coming out saying that we're good. You know, we're looking towards the future, and all his team has done since then is win improbable games, including last Friday night's game against Carolina, which was a circus to watch. So from that perspective, you know what? Washington's going to be third in the division before it's over. Washington will end up playing either the Rangers or Carolina in the first round. And, you know, that I'm not sure that's the reward for being third. But at the same time, you know, that's where the cap of changing. Spencer Carberry has done an amazing job there. You know, Alex Ovechkin's bought in and is now scoring. And now the Gretzky race is back on, which is kind of cool.
Mm. Back on the Canucks, let's ask you our Tim Hortons poll question. He was sat down last night with a day-to-day injury. Elias Lindholm as a Vancouver Canucks, Canuck, John. Remind us what you thought off the top when they made the deal. 9 points in 22 games. As mentioned, he's a little nick now. We're asking, would you do that trade again if you're the Canucks?
Sure. Sure, I would. I would because I bought him for the playoffs. I didn't buy him for the regular season. You know, he will be a valuable player for the hockey club come, what, the 20th or 22nd of April. That's when he was acquired for. At this point, he's just a rental, right? You know, so from that perspective, you brought him in to assimilate him earlier. And when you get to the Stanley Cup playoffs and the players aren't being paid, it's just try to get to the Stanley Cup championship. And that's what Lindholm's going to try to do. To rest him makes a ton of sense. You know, the Oilers did this with Evander Kane in Ottawa, too. They need those types of players. The Canucks need Lindholm. The Oilers need Kane for the postseason. They don't necessarily need them right now.
John, one final one for me, I guess. What's the sense around this Vancouver Canucks team as you talk to NHL GMs that are going to play them? I know, you know, I'm talking to guys that say that they want to play the Canucks in the playoffs because they're a team that, you know, they lack the experience of the star power that's, you know, seen playoffs and what it's really going to be like. So what's the sense that from around the league of teams looking at this team going in?
Well, I think everybody marvels at the story in the first place, that it is one of the best turnarounds we've seen in a long time. I also think it's a much different team in the playoffs if it's Thatcher Demko rather than Casey DeSmith. And that's not a knock at DeSmith. I think he's done yeoman's work really well. But Thatcher Demko should be in the Vezina discussion. Casey Smith will never be in that discussion. So it's a different team with Demko. And it'll be a better team when Lindholm's in the lineup too. So I'm not sure that anybody's sitting there saying, oh, you know what, the Canucks are going to be an easy out. There are no easy outs in the West. There are no easy outs in the West. This goes back to our discussion, Maddie, last week. Well, how do you view the success of the Canucks for the season if they lose in the first round? And people get greedy after the success the Canucks have had this year. Really greedy. And they should. They should enjoy it and get to the playoffs. And, you know, if they get through the second round, then I'm going to start to maybe have the champagne a little bit on ice.
Yeah.
But that to me is where the measure of success will be if they get to the second round.
Yeah, and I think you were a little gentler than Blake and I last week, but I think it would be a disappointment.
Isn't that always the case, though?
It's probably always the case, yeah. Sean, yeah. Fair enough. I just think it'd be a little bit disappointing to go all this way, be like right there at the top of the table for most of the year and not win a playoff.
But
I think if they win a playoff round, then I think everybody feels pretty happy about it. And beyond that, you can call it gravy. We did have harsher listeners, Sean, say you don't give up what you gave up for Lindholm just to win a round. That was more an all-in signal of a trade. But, you know, it's just so darn hard to win this thing that if you make it to the final eight from where Vancouver was last year at the beginning of the year, I think they can feel reasonably good about that.
Oh, no, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yeah. But what we have to do with the 16 teams that are going to get into the playoffs, and this is not just a Vancouver thing, you have to prepare yourself that there are going to be four or five really good teams out in the first round. Four or five, not one, but four or five. That's a reality of what the playoffs are going to be like in 2024.
Can I circle back? You think? Sure. Do you think Demko still has a chance at the Vezina here? even with missing all these games?
I think he has a chance to be a finalist.
Yeah, I do.
Whether he wins it, I mean, is another question. But if the Professional Hockey Writers Association are putting together their ballot, I think he's in the top three.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. It's just an unfortunate injury for that specific goal, because, boy, the guy in Winnipeg just keeps winning and keeps playing great hockey.
Although, I mean, Connor Hellebuck had a brutal weekend.
Bobrovsky's coming here, too. Yeah.
Yeah, Connor Hellebuck had a brutal weekend. So, I mean, you can't measure it on single events or two or three days. You have to look at the body work, and based on the body work, Demko deserves to be there.
Yeah, and even after a brutal weekend, he still leads Demko in goals against average and save percentage, a couple wins back, and of course, a couple of Bobrovsky and Saros are coming here too. With what Washington or with what Nashville is doing, with what Florida is doing as well. John, marvelous stuff. Thank you for the time here today, sir, and we will catch up next week.
It's always great to catch up on the old pal Irv too.
Oh, good. Oh,
thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Are you
it.
Like responsible for his career? Did you get him started or anything?
No. But we did a little bit of work together.
Okay. All right.
When we were working at the Empire, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I asked just because John has been responsible for so many careers across this country.
Can I tell a quick story? It was social media on the weekend. Ron went a little awry on Saturday night asking Bobby McMahon about whether he knew Glenn Sather's mother's dress shop in Wainwright in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, Ron's you know, asking silly questions, and somebody says, I blame John Shannon for that. So,
were you in his ear telling, ask about Wainwright, the dress shop in Wainwright?
There was a day it would have been in his ear. It wasn't Saturday night.
Yeah. Awesome. Good show. Thanks, John.
Cheers.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Garrison Price from Wall Center presentation, Applewood Auto Group. We're right now at Applewood Ford in Port Hardy, the 2023 F-150. Everybody knows the F-150. Finance at 0%, up to 60 months on select trims. It's all good at Applewood. Let's get to some hashtags, the best and worst of Twitter.com. And of course, our Tim Hortons poll question today. You can vote on Twitter. Would you do the Elias Lindholm trade again? Yes or no? Vote on YouTube as well. Hashtags, best and worst at Twitter.com. Mr. Gaffar, lead us off.
Well, Masters Week is a couple weeks away. Kyle Porter, CBS, kind of throwing out the Masters odds, Matt. Scottie Scheffler, no surprise, plus 450. Rory McIlroy, 10-1. The most interesting one for me is Brooks Koepka.
Oh, wow.
20-1 to win the Masters. The guy holds a major right now.
Yep.
So if you want some value in the betting world, I mean, I know the Masters is a different tournament, and Rahm obviously was the past winner, but I like Koepka. I really do.
Wow, at those numbers. Yeah. Absolutely. And here's the thing. Of guys who are active on the PGA Tour, he has the most majors. Yeah. He passed Rory last year when he won that PGA Championship. Third, if I'm not mistaken. Third PGA, fifth overall. You would think that Augusta suits his game as well with the way that he bombs it out there. And, you know, maybe he's got enough experience at this level, at this stage of the game now, to know those greens and add another major to the resume. At FOS, Front Office Sports. Wow. What a scandal. I'm not sure there could be a gambling scandal that is bigger than what's going on with Shohei Ohtani right now, because just he's the best player in baseball and is now accusing his interpreter of stealing millions of dollars after the story changed. Jontay Porter is certainly not in basketball circles what Shohei Ohtani is in baseball circles. But if you miss this, the Toronto Raptors big man subbed out after 4 minutes due to an eye injury. He has twice this year left games early in the proceedings. And lo and behold, on both of those nights, the biggest bet prop bets with the NBA's gambling partners were unders on Jontay Porter.
Yeah.
Of all players.
And the crazy thing is, you know, obviously the red flags go up with the NBA and Adam Silver seeing as, you know, someone putting a ridiculous amount of money on that. But there's a shot of it, actually. He hits a three. It banks in. You can almost tell the guy was missing, like meaning to miss the shot. And he goes back and the camera goes to him, as it usually does. And he looks distraught.
Oh. So this happened in January. It happened again last week where he left games. Head coach there says, look, I'm just learning of this now. I just always believe players when they tell me they're injured or ill. So it's an easy move for him to say, okay, sit on down. You're not playing again tonight. So Porter three-pointers prop, the biggest money winner on DraftKings. And his career is now in jeopardy. More information from Adam Laskaris of the Daily Hive, who dug deeper into Jontay Porter and found out he spends a fair bit of time tweeting from a secondary account about cryptocurrencies and the stock market. He at least once from a account, which is mostly about trading. So he's got his personal account, then he's got a secondary account, Tay Trades. From that Tay Trades account, he has also tweeted once about an easy March Madness parlay from 2 years ago. So there seems to be a lot of information here suggesting that Jontay Porter, who's kind of a fringe NBA guy to begin with, has other financial interests around trading and around gambling, and now is at the center of this gambling controversy, and Adam Silver and the NBA looking at it. I don't like his chances here.
I don't like his chances either. I mean,
say the video is compelling.
The video is compelling. Calvin Ridley got suspended for a year.
The NFL has suspended a number of players. I think they're up to 10 players now.
Yeah, and Adam Silver is no stranger to lowering the boom on players, no matter who you are. So this guy, for being a fringe NBA player to begin with, going up against the integrity of the shield.
And Irf, this is why the NFL for so long was hardcore about not gambling. I covered a Super Bowl, it was 20 years ago, but it seems like a lifetime ago, where the NFL did not even accept ads from Las Vegas's tourism board because they didn't want that association with legalized sports gambling. Needless to say, that file has changed exponentially in the last 20 years to the point where now leagues are in bed with different gambling partners. This is one of the things that they have to be on the lookout for. And I think you're going to see more. Ian Mendez did a terrific story on this in The Athletic a couple of months ago. Yeah. I think you're going to hear and see more and more of this.
Well, the problem is everyone thinks it's not okay. I mean, you gamble. Obviously, if you're a player in the league, there are rules and things like that, but half the NBA shows are sponsored by a gambling company. Heck, some of the shows that we're on that are sponsored by gambling companies. The NHL has deals with MGM resorts and different types of things. So it is very apparent it's out there. The gambling companies obviously have the money to do it. I mean, Charles Barkley, for Christ's sake, has his own parlay every single time that they're on the air. So I think when you look at it from the player's perspective, the thing that gets a little crazy to me is if the player's like, if he's getting in trouble, if there's another party that's saying, you got to try and throw this game a little bit or something like that.
Well, needless to say, when Jonte Porter's prop bets are amongst the most heavily bet props of an NBA night, that's going to raise a red flag. Hey, they've been doing this in England for years, so there should be a template there in terms of how the EPL and other soccer leagues and places where legalized sports gambling has been a thing much longer than here in North America. There should be some learnings there, but no, it cuts. There are these massive signs in every baseball clubhouse about gambling, and the reason being is it is one of the cardinal sins that if the integrity of the enterprise comes into question, you have massive, massive risk there financially, much more than whatever you stand to gain by partnering with different gaming companies.
Well, the crazy thing is, see where this goes. And the crazy thing too, how easy is it to gamble? Like you can make a bet on a game within 5 minutes, less than that, 30 seconds. It's just so readily accessible.
Like there are people around this world who gamble on individual tennis points.
Oh yeah.
One of the reasons baseball is moving towards an automated strike zone is to bet on single pitches. There are crowds that are willing to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how you feel about it, but all was not disclosed on the Sheen Pinto file in Ottawa earlier. There's just no way
I agree
that you suspend a guy for half a season if he wasn't doing the betting and betting on hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they tried to cover it up as best they can. He certainly tried to cover it up by throwing a friend under the bus. I think the NHL came to learn, no, it was him. Yes, it was hockey. And that's why you saw such a stern suspension. Because, of course, NHL players are allowed to gamble on other sports.
I remember covering the All-Star game in San Jose. It was 2018-2019. And the NHL announced its player and puck data tracking. So the biggest takeaway was that same weekend, they announced their partnership with MGM. And within that, the NHL was going to give its data to MGM. And there was a report, I think it was Elliot, that said the NHL was thinking of going and reconfiguring the Wi-Fi in every single building so it would be easier and faster to do real-time betting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. No, it's a massive revenue source. This is one of the offshoot problems that comes with it and ones that the leagues are going to have to be vigilant against. What else you got?
Speaking of making money, the NFL is planning to play another game on Christmas Day at Adam Schefter reporting on a Wednesday this season. Are you buying it or no?
Well, honestly, I love the Christmas Day games.
So do I. I'm not complaining.
I'm wondering how much peace there would be at my family household without the NFL game that people can get lost in for 3 hours.
No, absolutely.
Needless to say, Wednesday, not a typical day for the NFL. And if you're the NBA, you got to feel like, oh, this was our day. And look, I like what the NHL does and says, no, that's family time. Mm-hmm. Everybody take the day. But as a consumer, I absolutely adore watching the Christmas Day games from the NFL. That has been a great addition to our Christmas Day tradition.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, because my mom and brother usually are cooking, so we will plan the day around the game, right? Like eating time is, anyways. At I Am Kenneth Chan of the Daily Hive, this is the design of Vancouver Canadiens' major expansion of Nat Bailey Stadium. A new building with an indoor training center will be built on the ballpark's right field side. On its rooftop, a new grandstand. Now, first, just a little bit of context here, everybody. When baseball went about reordering the minor leagues a couple of years back, one of the things that came part and parcel with that was minor league players unionized, and it was like, okay, no more of these really crappy old stadiums where the medical facilities are a training table thrown down in a hallway, right? So there were capital upgrades, stadium upgrades required to be part of the minor leagues going forward. And this applies, of course, to the Vancouver Canadiens and Nat Bailey Stadium. I think this is also one of the reasons why you have a new owner of the Vancouver Canadiens in Diamond Baseball Holdings. They are well-versed in running minor league clubs. They knew all of this was coming. This is what they do, and this is what they do quite expertly. And knowing that this was going to be a tough ask of the city to make these capital upgrades. So the new building is going to replace the picnic area down the right field line, if you're familiar with Nat Bailey. Mm-hmm. It's going to be purpose-built for the home team. Locker rooms, training, support, coaches' rooms, batting and pitching tunnels are going to be in there as well. It's the other facilities that were required. And it's going to be visible to the public from the parking lot side behind large windows. So that's kind of cool. You'll be able to watch a guy take BP or, you know, get some pitches in there. Main entrance to the training facility is going to be through the first base side, so the players are going to have direct access to the field. And then on top of this building, three spectator open-air seating areas. The second rooftop level is two levels. Four club seating sections with seating groups of 12 to 28 spectators on the lower rooftop, and an area with tables and an open space designed for a temporary bar and food service in the middle of the rooftop. That's going to be the only outdoor area because the rest of it is going to be protected by a roof.
Hmm.
So even on a rainy night at Nat Bailey Stadium, you'll be able to stay dry. The one thing about it is the existing picnic area can hold about 400 people. Going to be 329 seats available atop this building. So the capacity is going to come down a little bit, 71 seats. But we're going to be looking at a brand spanking new building attached to Nat Bailey Stadium on the right field side. And I think that rooftop is going to be a hot ticket.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Matt, I've always said one of my favorite things, if not one of the best things to do in this city in the summer, is go to a Vancouver Canadiens game. Nooners at the Nat, those are incredible. I know you guys used to have shows there all the time, doing those shows and things like that. But it's about time, to be completely honest. It really is.
Look, Andy Dunn used to always say, oh, yeah, the most charming little ballpark. You should have seen what we needed to do to it to get it ready when they first bought the team, Jake and Jeff. And then, of course, when they came back to Nat Bailey after the pandemic, yeah, and it required some TLC as well. They have done an amazing job, the Vancouver Canadiens have, of dressing the set there and turning Nat Bailey into what it is and what we all know and love as Vancouverites. It's the best outdoor patio in the city, as some will say, right? Live entertainment.
I agree.
And this will be yet another, I'm sure, welcomed addition to the ballpark. So looking forward to this in a couple of years.
Final one for me.
Mm-hmm.
NHL PR, first time in NHL history that the top seven teams in the overall league standings have been separated by 1 point or less after each completing at least 85% of their schedule. People at the front office of the league have to be happy there. But how much stock, my question to you, Mac, mm-hmm, do you take in winning the President's Trophy?
So we talked about this a little last week. I'm not superstitious.
Yeah.
So I don't fall into that, you know, oh, winning the President's Trophy is here. In fact, I think there's data that suggests you win the cup more often from the President's Trophy spot than you do from other seeds in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I honestly think there should be it should get a little more love. Like, it's achievement over 82 games.
You know.
As you know, with, like, European football, that is your championship,
yep,
right? Like, that's they look at it and go, that is the better test of who's the best team over the longer haul. If you ask me to pick one right now, Irv, boy, Colorado's really coming here, huh? Nine in a row. I think I would probably cast my lot with Colorado at 97 points. Having won nine in a row, 1 point behind the Canucks, of course, and 1 point behind the Rangers, but right there with the rest of them, Florida and Boston.
Yeah, I'm thinking Florida.
Are you?
Yeah. I just think that, you know, I mean, obviously the goaltending up near the top of the league there is incredible, but Bobrovsky, if he turns it on, like, the way that he can,
yes,
that, and that team can score some goals, I might go with the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, I hear you. And lastly for me, at Cap Friendly, Vegas born have moved Thomas Hurdle to LTIR in order to create the cap space needed to recall Yuri Patera. They now have a total of $21,250,000 in LTIR relief. Yes, Aiden Hill got hurt on the weekend. They needed a goaltender. They couldn't afford to call up the goaltender. So Thomas Hurdle to the long-term injured. And they're now officially $21 million over the cap with the LTIR relief. I bring this up, one, because it's a little bit galling and we're tracking all this overage. But secondly, I spent the weekend in Vegas, and I was a little surprised at how down some of the locals are on the Knights' chances to repeat. It seems to be that, you know, we all look at it from the outside here in Canada and go, oh, look at that lineup. They're going to be able to dress on game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. People who watch the team night to night don't necessarily share the same optimism.
Yeah, I think that also, I mean, if you follow this team, and obviously we are now a lot closer because they're an opponent the Canucks could possibly face. They're not the same team, but it's Vegas, and it's kind of what we know. They're able to turn it on in the playoffs. I know guys in that room aren't too worried at all, but it's funny you mentioned that because I tweeted earlier about the playoff schedule moving. Now, half the mentions are saying, well, just in time for Mark Stone to come back from injury and just in time for this and that.
Well, actually, they might be one team that are like, no, start the playoffs as late as possible. Yeah. We want Mark Stone back. But we'll see if he's there on night one. Hurdle, incidentally, is supposed to come back before the end of the regular season. So we will see how they account for Thomas Hurdle when that becomes the case. And that's hashtags for today. Well, a really neat story here, and we wanted to get to one of the principals. Stefan Radzinski is a Canadian race car driver from Edmonton. He races in the Pirelli GT4 America Series for Flying Lizard Motorsport, and this year, when they get going in a couple of weeks here in Sonoma, California, he will be racing in the Applewood Auto Group livery, a Nissan Z, and he joins us on the line now. Stefan, thanks for making time.
Appreciate it. Super excited to get going. Been a lot of work the last few months to kind of put the program together, and just an honor to be a part of it. And being, I live in BC now, so being a BC representative kind of at this worldwide stage, obviously, is huge. So the series races around North America, but, you know, not that many Canadians. So it's cool to be one of the few representing, us.
Right. When you talk about putting this program together, like, tell us what went into that.
I would say last year I had a pretty tough year. So post kind of the COVID, being Canadian motorsports, unless you were somewhere else, was really, really challenging. I was fortunate to get an opportunity to race last year. It was a tough year, but kind of got my feet back in the game and back into the sport. So that was great. But in around December, I didn't really have anything set up for 2024. I was talking to the Flying Lizard Motorsports team, just trying to understand what were their plans and programs for the upcoming year. And they said, hey, well, we really have this deal with this manufacturer that I can't name, and we really want to do it. And then back and forth, I was like, can you just tell me what country they're from? And when they said, well, I'll just tell you it's Nissan, the light bulb went off for me, because I've got a good relationship over the years of the Applewood Auto Group, worked with them on a number of different programs. And so we started discussing. They were obviously very excited by it. Going with one of North America's premier sports car teams, having a chance to represent the Applewood Auto Group in that scenario, stars aligned.
Well, and for those who don't know, it is exceedingly rare, if not unprecedented, for a regional automotive group to get behind a driver and a car at this level. Like, this is a pretty special thing what Applewood has done here, Stefan. Tell us about your relationship there.
100%. I mean, this is this is a, it's a pretty cool story. I would say, I think the beginning of Applewood Auto Group was about 25 years ago. That's probably when I started racing, actually. So we've kind of, we've been through it in different ways. Obviously I've committed my whole life to this sport, and then having them grow to the point where it's, this is something that's a possibility. It's an incredible honor. Honestly, it's very, very cool. I'm super lucky to be the representative, and now it's just also on me to do a good job. And obviously we want to be winning races. So I'm very excited for it.
Yeah. You don't have to tell us. We know the Applewood folks are car enthusiasts. We've been to the burnout pit out at the Performance Center and have seen the crowds that Applewood attracts there at the Performance Center. I'm hoping some of those crowds spill over and follow you. You say you're in BC now, Stefan. Tell us about that, like the migration.
The migration.
For you, and your career as a race car driver.
Yeah, so I grew up racing go-karts, obviously, when I was young. Went down the Formula Car route. Was kind of trying to follow in my hero Greg Moore's footsteps. So Greg Moore, obviously, BC kid. So that was who I looked up to when I was very young. And the Formula Car route just kind of, I just didn't have the support and the funding to kind of keep going down that road. So I ended up racing a bunch of other different things. I raced in stock cars. I raced in Nissan Micra Cup cars, which were literally the Nissan Micras that you see on the street, which were at the time the cheapest car you could buy in Canada. But they were turning into race cars, and I raced that for years. So, you know, that's kind of like the highs and lows. You've been racing in some of the top events in North America, and then you're racing micros, which was actually some of the most fun I ever had. So as much as, you know, it may have not been a linear path to where we are now, I'm very grateful for all those opportunities and all the times kind of taking steps back and forward, because you just really never know where it ends up. So yeah, super grateful. I've had a chance to race around the world in electric cars, prototype cars, all sorts of things. But this is probably the program I'm most excited by, just because, again, you're representing people who believe in you and with the Applewood Auto Group, and then you're getting a chance with an amazing team like Flying Lizard Motorsports, which if you have any motorsports interest or attention, you may have seen a Porsche versus Corvette battle on YouTube. And if you look it up, it's got millions of views. That was the Flying Lizard Motorsports team. So that's kind of their, what they're known for. They were very successful for a long time.
Yeah, doing some reading on them, they've had a big presence in this sport and in this series in particular. And look, and reading about your background, Stefan, you know, as a karting champion, as a little guy, so fantastic to see you at this level. What are the chances this year? How do you fancy your chances?
You know, I think we're supposed to be doing the underselling at this point, saying, well, we'll see, we'll see. That's the common thing you want to say as you go on to this, but obviously feeling very good. The car performed exceptionally well. So we're racing our Nissan Nismo Z, or Z Nismo, pardon me. And we're going to go up against Aston Martins, Porsches, BMWs, Toyotas. You know, everyone's sports car is kind of built to this GT4 platform and category. So Nissan, this will be their second year in the series, but they brought a lot of updates to the car this year. So in initial testing, I'm feeling very good in the car. We'll know much more in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Once we have some time sessions. That's going to be tell the real story, but I don't think we're leaving anything on the table as far as I can tell.
Tell me about the Greg Moore. Tell me about Greg Moore being your guy. How did that come to be?
Yeah, my dad was a Paul Tracy guy, and I was, and it's funny because I know Paul now, and he's a great guy, but I was a Greg Moore guy. I think just naturally I was a Canadian kid growing up. I was the kid who was watching IndyCar and Formula One since I was born, basically. So now that's become maybe more culturally relevant, but I was the original one back in the day. So Greg was very exciting driving style, obviously super personable. Just seemed like a great guy. I mean, he passed away when I was, unfortunately, I was 6 years old. So I wasn't very old, turning seven. But I remember, obviously, all of it very vividly. But he was just, he had the right spirit and the energy. He loved racing, you could tell. And I just really appreciated that about him. So, yeah, I was a big IndyCar fan, open wheel fan growing up. And that was definitely a big part of it. I have a red gloves rule on my helmet, which is, you know, with 99 on it. So I've always had that since I raced cars.
That's amazing. For those who don't know, Greg Moore, always the red gloves, and wore number 99. Had a chance to interview him once upon a time. Just an amazing guy. So personable, so outgoing. And yes, there was a time in this country where you were from Quebec, you rooted for Villeneuve. You were from Ontario, you rooted for Tracy. And if you were from British Columbia, you rooted for Greg Moore. And any given weekend on the IndyCar Series, you could have a Canadian on the top step. It was really, really exciting stuff. We'll be rooting for you all season, Stefan. Best of luck in Sonoma, California on April 5th weekend. Thank you for this. And hey, great to be part of the Big Applewood Auto Group family with you, buddy.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much, Matthew.
So Carson Price from Wall Center and a presentation of Applewood Auto Group. You can text us 778-402-9680 and do so because every Friday we go to the people, read your takes, in some cases evaluate them, and fill up a full segment with everything you have to say about the Vancouver Canucks. And we love hearing from you. Also, a reminder that April 20th at the Hollywood Theater in Kitsilano on West Broadway, Bro Do Your Playoffs, a special event looking forward to our city's return to the hockey playoffs for the first time in 9 years, not to mention raising some money for a great cause, the BC Mental Health Foundation, in the name of our late friend and colleague Jason Botchford. We're going to have a number of media panels on site. Our friends from the matinee are going to play a special set. We'll take some audience questions there, so more opportunity to get your takes in. Tickets are $10. Again, mentioned the proceeds going to the BC Mental Health Foundation, and you can get your tickets at nationgear.ca. All right, Irv. Monday's poll question, Tim Horton's poll question. We asked them what they would rather see.
Okay.
The Canucks winning that game against the Kings and clinching a playoff spot, or a St. Louis win over Vegas, which really would have narrowed the gap between the Blues and Golden Knights for the final playoff spot in the West. What did the people say?
Well, Matt, when you look at it, I think that neither won. Neither happens. Neither happened.
So whatever you voted for, you're a loser.
If, in fact, I wanted something to happen, it probably would have been the Anarchy. I know that you'd have to do the math and all of that, right. But St. Louis getting closer is just way more fun when you look at that eighth playoff
season. And that's where people voted, believe it or not. Yeah. Even above the Canucks clinching a playoff spot, 65% said they wanted to see the St. Louis win over Vegas. I think part of it, reading through the comments, is, look, the Canucks are going to clinch. It's inevitable. And a lot of people want to avoid Vegas. Chris, Canucks will clinch soon enough. I'd rather see Vegas under the playoff bar. Slide path. I want Vegas in the first round. They have no fire. They don't care about winning. Easy first round. Someone squeaking into the playoffs are going to play hard. G-Man says, personally, I would like to see Vegas spit the bit. They just play games with the cap, and I think it's a farce. Matt the Carpenter, though. Canucks have played horrible against the Blues. Careful what you wish for. Clinching is pretty rad on its own. They absolutely dominated St. Louis in the first matchup of the season. You have to go way back to October 7th. It was a 5-0 victory. It was over early. But they've lost the next two meetings to the Blues, including one in overtime. So St. Louis does have a pair of wins. There's not many opponents around the NHL that have a winning record against Vancouver this year. St. Louis is one of them. And then SU says, playoffs, but who cares who we play? Don't be Toronto.
See a lot of that on our comments. YouTube, 55% in favor of St. Louis beating Vegas, which, of course, did not happen.
No, neither happened.
Top comment from Big Amigo. I, for one, would be absolutely ecstatic if Vegas misses the playoffs. Let them burn in salary cap hell.
Yeah.
And then this one from OMFG. On one hand, Vegas is getting so banged up that facing them in round one probably wouldn't be that bad or embarrassing if the Canucks lose that. On the other hand, Vegas missing the playoffs would be amazingly funny.
Yeah. I can't say I can get behind the loser mentality of, oh, if we lose to Vegas, at least we lost to the defending Stanley Cup champion. You remember we used to play that game?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
3 years in a row, right? Yeah. Hey, they just Boston, L.A., Chicago, they lost to the, you know, the eventual cup champion.
But if they're so banged up here,
wanted to grit my teeth and jump through phone line every time I heard it.
I think when you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, though, like, I agree with you, Grady, they are banged up. I mean, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with their goaltending situation. Obviously, the guys that are maybe coming back, are they going to be 100%? It's going to take some time for that. But like John Shannon mentioned, I mean, there's no easy out for anybody. No. Right now, whether you're the Canucks or whether you're an 8 seed playing the Vancouver Canucks, your focus should be to go and play good hockey. I don't care at all about the President's Trophy. I think the Canucks should have way bigger sights set on just finishing a top place in the league.
And if there is a team that can turn it on, they just won the cup last year.
Right.
A lot of playoff performers on that roster.
God, you say they're banged up, and yet I looked at their depth chart last night. Like, if that's banged up, that's pretty good. What they're able to trot out there, particularly in the forward lines. I mean, that's banged up, and I'm looking at, like, I was actually looking at who's going to come out of that lineup.
Well, that's the thing.
In game one.
And William Karlsson was a third-line center last year.
Yeah. Well, but, like, they still, like, even with injuries, they have a really serviceable bottom six. So.
And Logan Thompson has been playing pretty well of late. He was really good last night. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could well be a scenario for Vegas like last year that if Hurdle and Stone are ready to go for game one, and Hurdle should absolutely be, we'll see about Stone. I think it might be a scenario where if we're like Teddy Bluger last year, where a pretty good hockey player is getting scratched.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, Phil Kessel. Like, you know, I think you could be looking at a scenario like that for VGK if they regain health come the opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Okay, errors and omissions, couple to report on Friday. You're telling me Blake Price didn't self-report his error on the Valspar Championship on Monday's show, Grady? Shame. Because he did actually, mention it to me Friday after the show. He called it a reduced field at the Valspar. It was not a reduced field. It was a full field. Frank Saravelli called JT Miller a 100-point player. Close, but technically 99 was as good as it's gotten for JT Miller. He may get to 100 this year, but we shall see. Was there anything else, Grady, that you were able to flag?
Yeah, Blake mentioned, and he corrected in the show, that he thought Miller had 5 years left on his contract. This is the first year of the 7-year, $56 million extension, so 6 years remaining.
Mm-hmm. Errors and omissions brought to you by our friends at Yellow Dog Brewing, Neighborhood Brewing, Yellow Dog Spirits, Foolish Winery, and Yellow Dog has released the second mix pack, Dog Park. The Dog Park 8 tall can mix pack consists of 4 light refreshing beers, the classic Retriever Golden Ale, Rollover Cerveza Negra, and 2 brand new brews exclusive to the mix pack, Rascal Japanese Lager and Pack Leader Pilsner. Thanks for listening, everybody. A reminder, subscribe to this show, Rinkwide Vancouver, Canucks Conversation, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow on social, that's Twitter, Insta, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Of course, we're live 11:30 a.m. Pacific on many of those platforms daily. And, of course, support the community sponsors you hear us talking about. Keep it local.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.